I call the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order on April 16, 2024. There is a quorum present, so we got 2 minutes agenda items to approve. Vice Chair Purcell, may I have a motion to approve for April 4th?
Madam Chair, so moved.
Representative Purcell moves the approval of minutes for April 4th, 2024. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails and the minutes for April 4th, 2024 are approved. The next motion is for April 11th. Vice Chair Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the approval for minutes of April 11th, 2024.
Representative Purcell moves the approval of minutes for April 11th, 2024. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say no. The motion prevails and the minutes for April 11th, 2024 are approved. Members, today we have an informational hearing on the DE-1, so I'll just move DE-1 to be before the committee, and we will go through DE-1. There'll be no formal action taken today. Thursday will, amendments are due Wednesday at noon, and Thursday will take action on those, on the DE and amendments. And with that, I'll send it over to nonpartisan staff to do the walkthrough.
Chair and members, for the tape, Ken Savory, nonpartisan House fiscal staff. We'll walk through the spreadsheet first. Should be in your packets. In the upper left-hand corner, you'll see a label entitled HF3763-DE amendment. That is the DE amendment up for information today. Well, we'll start with the Department of Agriculture for changes to the in the DE. Line 8 is an increase of $300,000 for the soil health equipment grants. Line 9 is a transfer to the pollinator research account of $100,000 in FY25. Line 10 is $3,072,000 for nitrate treatment in FY25. Line 11 is an appropriation through the Department of Ag via the Department of Health for $223,000 to be transferred to the Department of Health for the private well drinking water assistance program. Moving down the list, you'll see line 16, which is an increase for the maintaining current service levels appropriation in the tails in FY26 and 27. That's a $40,000 increase in the tails for the biennium. Then on line 20 is an increase to the biofuels infrastructure appropriation with an agri of $100,000 one time. And then line 21 is an increase of $200,000 to the rider with an agri for the agri farm to school program of $200,000. Line 22 is a tails appropriation or a tails increase for agri more generally, and that would be in total $2,576,000 in FY26-27. Line 23 and 24 are a number of technical changes as requested by the department via the governor's bill. Is the cancellation line 23 of agri and cancellation of dairy within agri in FY24 of $4 million. And then on line 24, that $4 million is then reappropriated in FY25. Then line 25 is the cancellation of agri in FY25 of $23,107,000. And then the identical amount occurring again in FY25 with extended availability. Moving down to the admin and financial assistance portion, you'll see line 29 is an appropriation of one-time amounts for $300,000 for the beginning farmer equipment and infrastructure grants. And then line 30, you'll see a reduction to the maintain current service levels appropriation, specifically to the tails of $40,000. So the offset is on line 16 and line 30 for the maintaining current service levels, moving money between those two divisions of the department. Then flipping the page, there is an appropriation to AURI for food entrepreneur support of $250,000 in FY24. There are no changes financially for broadband. And moving down to the summary section, just showing line 57, appropriations to the Department of Agriculture net to in column R, $4,295,000 in FY24-25. and then $2,576,000 in FY 26-27. Line 59 is a summary for AURI. It contains $250,000 for the food entrepreneur support in FY 24. And then on line 62, you'll see in column R, total appropriations for this DE is $4,545,000, which is the amount contained within the budget resolution as passed by Ways and Means. And then additionally in column U, on line 62, you'll see $2,576,000, which is the committee's spending in DE, EMM, and the TAILS. Those numbers are identical. On line 64, there's no general fund revenue changes or reductions. Moving down the sheet a little bit more, you'll see a non-general fund expenditures area. We'll go through that. Line 68 is the AFREC extension. The DE amendment extends the AFREC program by 1 year, so there's additional spending for AFREC of $1,270,000 in FY26. Members may notice that that number is slightly different than the governor's number, but the DE amendment is using updated data from Representative Fisher's bill, which was the fiscal note, so it's $1,270,000 for the 40-cent surcharge collection and expenditure. Moving down the list, you'll see line 70, which is an item to translate all certified applicator tests in Spanish. This will be coming out of the PRA account within the Ag Fund, and that's $900,000 in each fiscal year starting in FY25. Additionally, line 71, this is in our provision, which Mr. Sullivan will go over, but I'll briefly talk about it here, which is the Private Well Drinking Water Assistance Program. This is capturing the 40-cent surcharge and applying it for that purpose. And so you'll see spending of the identical 40-cent amount of $1,270,000 in FY26 and FY27. Line 72 and 73 is related to the amended House File 3815, which takes the interest on top of the grant indemnity account and subscribes it to a purpose related to farmer debt reduction grants. Line 72 is the administration for those grants of $16,000 in FY25, and then $4,000 and $3,000 respectively in FY26-27. And then line 73 are the farmer debt reduction grants. This is the amount of interest that will be taken off of the top of the indemnity account and then prescribed for this purpose. So that would be $325,000 in FY25, $85,000 in 26, and then $70,000 in FY 2027. Flipping over, you'll see some non-general fund revenues. These kind of are associated with the expenditures that we saw on the previous page. Line 77 is the Private Well Drinking Water Assistance Program. Again, that the revenues from the 40 cents surcharge of $1,270,000 in both years of the TAILS. And then line 78, you'll see one more year of collection for AFREC, which is the same amount in FY25. $1,270,000. There's a handful of transfers to go over. Those are on lines 85 and 86. Line 85 is tracking the change of the interest of the grant indemnity account going into a new fund, so there has to be a transfer for that to happen. So money is transferring between the grant indemnity account on line 85 and then the farmer debt reduction account newly created on line 88, and those numbers are identical both for that. And then line 86, you'll see a transfer to the pollinator research account. This is the general fund appropriation within the Protection Services Division that will be going towards the pollinator account. So you'll see that moving from the general fund on line 86, $100,000, and then transferring on line 89, that $100,000 going into the pollinator research account. And Madam Chair, that concludes the spreadsheet walkthrough.
All right, thank you, Mr. Savory. Mr. Sullivan, if you can walk through the DE.
Madam Chair and members, I'll walk through the language for the Delete Everything Amendment, the H3763DE1. Starting on page one, just a note about the format for Article 1. What this section does, you can see on line 1.5, is it's pulling in last year's appropriations to the Department of Agriculture for fiscal years 24 and 25, and then amending that law as needed to modify appropriations or increase them, as Mr. Savory has talked about in the spreadsheet. So you'll see any language that is not underlined is current law and is not being proposed to change by the chair's DE1 amendment. So for that reason, I'm going to skip over a lot of the language. I'm happy to come back and answer any specific questions that members have, but I will highlight a couple of items in Article 1. Most of the language is from the chair's House File 5229 in this article. That's the governor's supplemental agriculture finance bill as carried by Chair Vang. But on page 19, you go down about halfway, 19.15 to 19.19. This is the portion of last year's law that sets the tails for the agricultural growth, research, and innovation program. And this language is increased on 19.17. This is from a separate bill of Chair Vang's House File 3763 that the committee heard earlier this session. Then if we can jump ahead to page 24. Earlier this year, the committee heard and amended Chair Vang's House File 4908 that had to do with the definition of emerging farmer and the preference provided to emerging farmers in various state programs. And you'll recall that in 4908, the chair was changing the definition of emerging farmer for purposes of these preferences, so creating two definitions. And this language on 24.4 through 24.15 is similar. Her House File 4908 also modified emerging farmer for purposes of the grants to Goodacre for the LEAF program. But you'll see that now instead of creating a new definition for emerging farmers, the language instead would require the Goodacre to compensate not emerging farmers, but farmers who are experiencing limited land access or limited market access when their crops are donated for hunger relief purposes. And then you'll see on 24.11 through 24.14, it refers to a section of statute where those definitions are established. And I'll make sure to walk through that portion of the bill when we get to that in Article 3. So then moving forward to page 26, again in Chair Vang's 4908, dealing with emerging farmer preference, this is the same sort of language that we just saw for the Goodacre LEAF grants, but this applies to grants enacted last year that would go to certified community development financial institutions or CDFIs. Then going on to page 28, starting on 28.1 and down through 28.18, this is the rider from last year for the Farm Down Payment Assistance Grant Program. If you'll recall earlier this session, the committee heard Chair Vang's House File 4547. She also amended this language onto House File 4908. But what this language does is for the fiscal year 25 round of farm down payment assistance grants, the department would be directed to give preference or priority not to emerging farmers, but instead to eligible applicants, so those who otherwise satisfy the eligibility criteria for down payment assistance grants, and also either gross no more than $100,000 a year from the sale of farm products, or produce listed crops, industrial hemp, cannabis, or one or more of the specialty crops that are eligible for assistance under the USDA's Specialty Crop Block Grant Program. Then on page 29, lines 29.16 to 29.20, just highlight this as this is new. Mr. Savory mentioned that there's $300,000 in the second year for beginning farmer equipment and infrastructure grants. So this is the rider, the new rider that goes along with that line on the spreadsheet. Then the bottom of page 29 is section 2. This is amending last year's appropriation to AURI, or the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. The new rider language is on page 30, lines 30.13 through 30.15. This is not language that the committee heard this year, but it is language that was in a bill heard last year, Representative Frederick's House File 1475. So that's the end of the appropriations articles, or article, and I'll move on. There are two more articles that contain agriculture statutory changes. First one, Article 2, contains all the sections the committee heard this year that would modify Minnesota statutes Chapter 18B, pesticide control. and there are a number of those, so they're grouped together in one article, Article 2. First section, Section 1, this was a department bill, or a portion of a department bill, House File 4699, as carried by Representative Purcell. Sections 2, 3, and 4 on page 31, these were sections, or Section 1 was in House File 4082 as introduced. That's a department bill carried by Representative Hansen and amended by Representative Hansen in committee. Sections 3 and 4 are the sections that he successfully added via amendment that require the department to consult outside experts in certain circumstances. Then moving on to page 32, Section 5, Training Manual and Examination Development. This is the first in a number of sections that were included in a department bill carried by Representative Purcell this session and heard by the committee. That's House File 4699. And they modify testing and other licensing requirements for licensed and certified pesticide applicators. So that's Section 5, 6, and 7 on 32. And then it's most of the language on page 33 down to Section 8, Renewal. Section 8 renewal includes language also from Representative Purcell's 4699, but then it also is combined with language that Representative Ream carried in House File 4164, which was another Department of Agriculture pesticide bill that the committee heard this year. The two bills both modify Minnesota Statute Section 18B.32 Subdivision 4, so the language from the Ream and the Purcell bills are combined into one section in Section 8. Section 9 on page 34 is from Representative Reams, House File 4164. On page 35, Section 10 is from Representative Purcell's bill 4699. Section 35 is also a combination of the Ream and Purcell bills, House Files 4164 and 4699. Page 36, Section 12 is from Representative Reams' bill. Section 13 from Representative Purcell's. Section 14, again, a combination of the Ream and Purcell bills. On page 38, these sections 15, 16, and 17 were all in Representative Purcell's House File 4699, as was Section 18, which starts in the middle of page 39 and continues halfway down page 40. Again, Section 19 is from the Representative Purcell's bill. That continues through the top of page 41 down to 41.13. And then the commercial applicator license examination language requirements. The committee will recognize this language from Representative Hemmingson-Yeager's House File 4110. But there are some changes in this language just to make members aware of. The language that the committee heard directed the department to ensure that the core examination for a commercial applicator license is available in Spanish and that applicants are informed that they may take the examination in Spanish. The department's fiscal note pointed out that it's not possible to become a licensed applicator by only passing the core exam. There are additional exams required, basically areas of specialty for applicators, whether that's aerial, aquatic, seed treatment, vertebrate control, etc. So what the language in Section 20 does is it directs the department to translate all examinations required for a commercial applicator license into Spanish. And then, as Mr. Savory mentioned, it directs the department to use the pesticide regulatory account dollars in the agricultural fund for that purpose. There's a statutory appropriation that this invokes in 18.05. And the pesticide regulatory account is where the department puts all the fee revenue from pesticide applicator licensing, any penalties that are collected after an enforcement action for pesticide misuse. So that money would be designated for purposes of translating the materials under this language. That's the end of the pesticide control sections in Article 2. The bottom of page 41 then begins Article 3. These are all the other agriculture statutory changes that are carried in the DE1 amendment. Starting off with Section 1 definitions, this is from Representative Tatke's House File 3809 that the committee heard earlier this session. This was a department bill modifying the compensation program for damage caused by wild elk to crops or fencing. So that's Section 1 on the bottom of 41 is from Representative Tapke's bill, as are on the following page, Sections 2 and 3. On page 43, Sections 4 and 5. And Section 5 then finishes up Representative Tapke's bill on the top of page 44, 44.10. The next, Section 6, debt reduction grants. This is language that Representative Hansen offered an amendment to Representative Cha's House File 3815, the grain buyer licensing and financial statement bill. But there are some changes in this language as well from the language the committee adopted via amendment. Just quickly, those differences are 44.19. The language specifies that the grants are up to $20,000 per eligible farmer per year. And then 44.21, 44.22 specifies that the department must award these grants on a reimbursement basis and points to the existing grants management requirements that apply to all state grants under Minnesota Statutes Chapter 16B. And then Subdivision 3 is new as well, requiring an annual report on this program to the legislature. So at the bottom of page 44, Section 7, now we're back to Chair Bang's House File 4908, which modified preference for emerging farmers under various state programs. So you'll see on the 44.31, right now under current law, the Department of Agriculture is required to give preference to emerging farmers when awarding beginning farmer equipment and infrastructure grants. 44.31 changes that preference from emerging farmers to farmers experiencing limited land access or limited market access, as those terms are defined in the following section. That's Section 8 on page 45, definitions. And this is actually, it's Representative Banks' House File 4908, and it's also lines 45.15 and 45.16. These are from a separate bill, Chair Banks' House File 4547, that would also provide that just in general, to be eligible for a down payment assistance grant, the applicant cannot be purchasing the farm from someone who they're related to by blood or marriage. And then the new definitions that are important for now several programs for providing preference begin on 45.19. Members will recall that Chair Bang's amendment used the term incubator farm when the committee heard House File 4908. Now in the DE, that term is defined on 45.19 through 45.27. And it's any farm where individuals are given temporary, exclusive, and affordable access to small parcels of land, infrastructure, and often training for the purpose of honing skills and launching a farm business, and where the majority of the individuals who are farming these small parcels of land grow industrial hemp, cannabis, or one of the specialty crops eligible under USDA's Specialty Crop Block Grant Program. So then, limited land access, that term is defined on the bottom of page 45, starting on 45.28. And this language is also a bit different from the committee, or what the committee adopted earlier this session. You'll see that it specifies that it's farming land that the individual, so in this case the applicant for one of these state grants, does not own when, one, the individual or the individual's child rents or leases the land, and each lease or rental agreement does not exceed 3 years in duration, and they're renting from a person who is not related to them by blood or marriage, so someone who is not their relative, or on page, so it's an or on 45.31, so limited land access could mean the short-term rental arrangement that I just described, or that the individual rents land from an incubator farm, as defined earlier in this section. And then limited market access, I believe this is the same language the committee adopted earlier. That would mean that the majority of the individual's annual farm product sales are direct sales to the consumer. So then Section 9 was also in Chair Bang's bill. You'll see now this is a reporting requirement for down payment assistance, farm down payment assistance grants. Adds a new reporting element, the number of applicants or recipients of down payment assistance grants who at the time of application were experiencing either limited land access or limited market access. So that's the end of down payment assistance. Now we jump at the bottom of page 46 to, this is new language that the committee has not reviewed before, and this is a change to the Department of Agriculture's Soil Health Financial Assistance Program, sometimes known as the Soil Health Equipment Grants. So this establishes additional requirements for the recipient of a soil health financial assistance grant. And here again, this language points to the fact that there are other grants management requirements that apply of all state grantees, periodic reporting, enforceable grant contracts, site visits if the grant exceeds a certain threshold. So in addition to those requirements that the department's already applying now, as a condition of receiving a soil health grant, the owner or lessee would have to commit to, and you see them 1, 2, and 3 on the top of page 47. They would have to commit to become certified under the Ag Water Quality Certification Program within 2 years, unless they're already certified at the time they receive the grant. They would have to commit that they will not lease or rent the equipment to another for profit or economic gain. And then finally, they'd have to commit that if they sell the equipment, they could sell it for no more than their documented share of the total purchase price. So they wouldn't be able to sell it for an amount that includes the state's contribution to the purchase of the equipment. Then move on to Section 11 and Sections 12, 13, 14, and 15, the bottom of page 47. These are all from a department bill carried by Representative Hansen, House File 3823. As amended successfully by Representative Hansen in this committee. What these sections on 47 do, are they really just establish new definitions for purposes of state fertilizer law in Minnesota Statutes Chapter 18C. The one that I will note is Section 13, finished sewage sludge product. Representative Hansen's amendment in committee defined the term mill organite, but because that's a specific product, that's a brand name, this language instead would define more generally the type of product that he would like to define in fertilizer law. So this finished sewage sludge product, this is based on a Wisconsin statute and attempts to generally characterize mill organite and other products that are used as fertilizer and derived from wastewater treatment sewage sludge. So that goes through the bottom of 47 in definitions, top of 48. Section 16 and 17 were also added, and Section 19, urea. Those were added via amendment in committee earlier this session. Section 18 was from the bill as introduced, modifying the definition of soil amendment as recommended by the Department of Agriculture. Sections 20 and 21 on the bottom of page 48 were also in Representative Hansen's bill as introduced and recommended by the Department of Agriculture, as was Section 2, which starts on the bottom of page 49, fertilizer plant food content. And that goes through about halfway through the page 50 before we get to Section 23, annual tonnage report. This was also added via amendment by Representative Hansen in committee this session. And then we're on to page 51 and Section 24. And this is language that governs fertilizer fees paid by registrants and distributors in the state. And so this language, payment of inspection fee, starting at the top of page 51, Section 24, this is language the committee's seen in a couple forms. This is a modified version of the language in Representative Hansen's House File 4135. But just to note, rather than increase the fertilizer fees or establish a new separate fee for drinking water, safe drinking water provision, this language effectively says on 51.13 to 51.17 that the 40-cent per ton fee that currently goes to AFREC, the Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Council, that continues to go for one more year through June 30th, one more fiscal year, June 30th, 2025, to AFREC for fertilizer grants, and then 51.15 after that date, so fiscal year 2026, state fiscal year 2026. Now that 40-cent fee would remain the same. It wouldn't increase, it wouldn't go away, but now it would be dedicated instead of for AFREC grants, it would go towards the new private well drinking water assistance program established later in this bill. So the bottom of page 51, sections 25, 26, and on to page 52, sections 27, these are one-year extensions of the AFREC council grant program and dedicated account. So on 52, section 28, this is the private well drinking water assistance program. Members have seen this language before. It was in Representative Hansen's bill, 4135. I would just note that one big difference, and I think the only difference between the language the committee reviewed earlier and this language, is that this would apply statewide. It would not be targeted to karst region counties, as the language previously did. So this would be available to local community health boards anywhere where residents have private drinking water, private wells, and get their drinking water from a private well that has nitrate in excess of 10 milligrams per liter. So then on to page 53, section 29. This was also amended on by Representative Hansen. This is basically language that clarifies that the Department of Agriculture may use the enforcement powers it uses for pesticide and fertilizer generally. That's administrative penalties, administrative actions, criminal penalties, and civil penalties. They can use that same suite of enforcement authority to enforce the groundwater protection rules that the department has promulgated. Section 30 rulemaking, this is industrial hemp. This was in Chair Banks' House File 5229, the governor's supplemental agriculture bill. Onto page 54, the top, that's posting of license rules, section 31. That's from Representative Cha's House File 3815, which was a department bill. It's really cleanup, to clean up a few statutes to reflect the fact that last year the legislature dedicated food handler license fees to a special dedicated account. So this language is just kind of cleaning up and making sure that statutes are all clear that that's the destination for food handler license fees. Section 32, expiration. This is from Representative Censor Murrah's House File 3821. This was a department bill the committee heard this year, and it extends the Food Safety and Defense Task Force by 10 years. Section 30, sale limitation honey. It's from Representative Purcell's 5147 that the committee heard last week. Page 55, section 34 is an extension of the Organic Advisory Task Force. The committee heard this as part of Chair Vang's House File 5229. That's a 10-year extension on 56.16. Page 57, section 35. These were recommendations by the governor and the Department of Agriculture, changes to their dairy development and profitability enhancement program as carried in Chair Vang's House File 5229. Then on page 58, section 36, this is new language to the committee this year. What this language does is requires the Department of Agriculture under current law to report to the legislature annually about the bioincentive programs, the advanced biofuel, renewable chemical, and biomass thermal energy incentive programs. This language, members might recall, if you served on the committee last year, the committee passed and the House passed similar reporting requirements that are on 58.17 through 58.30, equity hiring goals, wage goals and progress, board member and executive compensation, et cetera. What's new this year is that on 58.11, the department would also report on the recipients of sustainable aviation fuel tax credit certificates. So this doesn't modify the state tax credit at all. It just modifies the Department of Agriculture's reporting requirements for bioincentive and similar programs. So then page 59, sections 37 through 40. These were in Chair Vang's House File 5229 as recommended by the department. These all increase the Rural Finance Authority's participation in its various loan programs that it partners with private lenders to deliver. That's the Beginning Farmer Loan Program, the Restructuring Loan Program, Seller-Sponsored Loan Program, Agricultural Improvement Loan Program, and then at the top of page 60, the Livestock Expansion and Modernization Loan Program. And section 42 was also in Chair Vang's bill as recommended by the governor and the department. This modifies the RFA's disaster recovery loan program by allowing RFA and participating lenders to issue loans to farmers replacing feed when drought is the cause of the feed acquisition. Bottom of page 60, sections 43, and then on 61, sections 44. From Chair Vang's House File 4655, which the committee heard earlier this year, prohibiting waterfowl hatching projects in schools and charter schools. There's a new sentence that's on 62.2 to 61.3, excuse me, providing that this prohibition on hatching projects would not apply in the school setting if the hatching project was conducted by or with the support of or under the auspices of FFA or 4-H. So then section 45, financial statements. This was in Representative Cha's House File 3815. As recommended by the department, these members will recall are changes to the financial statement and audit requirements for licensed grain buyers and public grain warehouses. That continues on to page 62 and the top of page 63. And then sections 46 and 47 on page 63 work together. This is the, Mr. Savory described how the farmers market debt reduction grants are funded in the bill. And section 46 says that any interest earned on the grain indemnity account corpus through June 30th, 2029, or other investment proceeds must be deposited in the farmer debt reduction account, which is created in section 47. So that interest transfers to the new account is appropriated to the department to award the debt reduction grants under a section that I described previously. Page 64, two pages left. Top of page 64, sections 48, 49, 50, 51, 52. These were also included in Representative Cha's House File 3815. And again, have to do with licensing of grain buyers and public grain warehouses. Bottom of page 64, requiring a carbon credit report. Members will recall this language. Representative Purcell amended this onto her House File 4899 during its most recent hearing in the committee. And then section 54 is the final agriculture section. It's on the top of page 65. This is the repealer. These were sections that were included in department bills. Representative Tabke's 3809. Gets rid of the rulemaking requirement for the Department of Agriculture and the rules that the department has adopted under that authority, and basically replaces their rules with the language that the committee saw earlier that basically moves a lot of the guts of how the program works from rules into statute. And then 34.07, repeal of the beverage inspection account, is from Representative Cha's 4035. That's the last piece of the licensed food handler revenue dedication from last session. Then the short Article 4 for broadband, sections 1 and 2. These are the language the committee reviewed earlier this session as part of House File 5231, Chair Bang's bill, which is the governor's supplemental broadband recommendations. And that's it. The bottom of 65 is just the new title to reflect the bill as amended. And with that, Madam Chair, that's the end of the DE1.
All right, thank you, Mrs. Saul. Next, we will have testimony. And so our first testifier will be Commissioner Peterson from the Department of Agriculture and Deputy Commissioner Andrea Vauvel. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for being here. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Andrea Vauvel. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you so much, Chair Vang and the committee, for all of your work on this bill the last few months. We are very grateful for the chance to comment on the DE. We will be sending a letter with more specifics to you all later this week, so we won't dive into everything, but just a couple of highlights. First, again, to Chair Vang for her steadfast support of Agri. We are very grateful for the investment in fiscal year 26 and 27 to help with our staffing capacity issues and the many programs that Agri supports. So thank you so much for that investment. We appreciate the inclusion of the agency's most of the agency's requested policy language and technical fixes that are outlined in the bill. Also for enabling us to respond to the EPA's petition work plan with the investment you've made in nitrate treatments. We also appreciate the investment in soil health equipment grants as well. As we've discussed plenty of times in this committee, the extreme popularity that program has induced. We do urge the committee to allow leasing for soil health grants. We know a number of soil and water conservation districts do rent out the equipment. It's been extremely helpful for getting other farmers interested in soil health and getting the word out. So we would encourage folks to look at that. AFREC, we do have concerns with how AFREC is outlined in this bill. You will know that the governor's position supports a clean five-year extension, so we are open and happy to continue working on that in discussions with you, Chair Vang. We do have concerns about using the grain indemnity account interest as outlined in the bill. We think the debt reduction grant program is a great idea, but does need further fleshing out and more investment overall. We, again, would be happy to discuss this program further next year. Thank you so much to the chair for her work on the definitions for the down payment assistance program. We've had a number of conversations with stakeholders over the last few weeks. I think we've made real progress. We do look forward to continuing that conversation in conference with the Senate. We do have concerns generally with the sustainable aviation fuel technical fix not being in the Ag Committee bill. And the reporting requirements outlined in this bill, we do have concerns from a staff capacity perspective as well. Again, we look forward to further discussion on this. And then once again, thank you for the support of AGRI. We appreciate the flexibility and the ability to respond to the many ongoing and upcoming issues that come up in the agricultural sector. So thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Our next testifier is Andre Graham from the Community Investment Expansion Partners. Is Andre here? We can move on to our next one. Beth Nelson from Minnesota Cultivated Wild Rice Council.
Chair Vang and members of the committee, I'm Beth Nelson, president of the Minnesota Cultivated Wild Rice Council. And today we would like to encourage the House committee to adopt similar language that the Senate has just come up with as far as the agreed language for the wild rice research program. In your current bill, it still has the $450 for year one, but nothing for year two. The Senate did come up with a compromise that was offered by Senator Putnam and Senator Kunesh that essentially divides a little steeper than we would like to see on the cultivated wild rice side of things, but that $450,000 line item is now on the Senate side going $200,000 for the second year for research on natural stands of wild rice and $250,000 in the second year for the cultivated wild rice forward selection project, the project that you funded for the first year at $450,000. It, like I say, it's a compromise that that was developed, and while it's a little bit deeper cut than we would like to see, our growers, cultivated growers, are willing to increase their checkoff to make up about $100,000 of the $200,000 shortfall that we will see in our research program. Coming up with the full $200,000 will be probably outside of our reach, but having said that, we think this compromise is a good start to maybe healing Minnesota wild rice industry, both the lake stands and the cultivated side of the industry, so that we can maybe start to work better together and move the industry forward as a whole.
All right, thank you, Beth. Our next testifier is Tom Godward from the Minnesota Cultivated Wild Rice Council. Welcome, Tom. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Madam Chair, members, Thomas Godward, wild rice grower, Aiken, Minnesota. I support everything Beth said, and really, I'm on the Minnesota Cultivated Wild Rice Board, and I'm here to answer any questions, but I support what Beth just said and really have nothing else to say.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Our next testifier is Lauren Dower from the Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. Thank you for being here. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Vang and members of the committee. My name is Lauren Dower with the Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. I have the privilege of representing 30,000 farmer and rancher members from across our state. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on House File 3763 with the DE amendment. I want to take this time to thank the chair and each of you for your hard work over these past few months on this bill. I briefly will highlight a few provisions in the bill and provide suggestions when needed. First, we appreciate the consistent funding allocated to the Department of Agriculture for the AGRI program. We know this program plays a vital role in encouraging growth opportunities for the agriculture and renewable fuels industries. Thank you for including funds specifically for farm-to-school programs and the biofuel infrastructure grants. Regarding AGRI, the funds appropriated to the Institute will help develop digital assistance and food safety standards to those who want to learn about the cottage food industry. With these resources, new individuals will have the opportunity to expand their markets and grow the overall industry. I commend the committee's efforts towards soil health and water quality. We thank you for investing more into the Soil Health Financial Assistance Grant, which allows farmers access to technology and equipment that helps them participate in practices that make sense on their farms. Lastly, I would like to point out our concern with transferring the fertilizer fee away from AFRAC. The council in its research has shown strong commitment to better understanding how fertilizer is utilized and what best management practices assist us in reducing nitrate runoff into our groundwater. AFRAC is a direct reflection of the collaboration among our major agricultural groups and in our state, and it is critical to our members who wish to improve their soils, clean water, and economic vitality for the future. Farmers have and always will continue to be a part of the solution, and we're willing to work with the author and the committee as it goes through the committee process. Thank you for letting me testify.
Thank you, Lauren. Our next testifier is Amanda Bilek from the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. Welcome, Amanda, if you can identify yourself before the record and proceed.
Great. Thank you, Chair Vang. And members of the committee, my name is Amanda Bilek. I am the Senior Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. We appreciate Chair Vang bringing the DE to the House File 3763 forward and addressing some specific needs in response to the EPA petition related to nitrates in southeast Minnesota. MCGA is committed to addressing nitrogen challenges in southeast Minnesota, as well as other vulnerable groundwater areas. We would do that work through partnerships, research policy, and best management practice adoption. So we look forward to continued partnership with state agencies to help implement the work plan that they have developed in response to the EPA petition. We support the one-time funding to the Department of Agriculture to help provide drinking water to those with private wells that exceed or are near the drinking water standard for nitrates. We also do support the additional $300,000 for the Soil Health Financial Assistance Program. As been said earlier, this program has strong support by Minnesota farmers, and it's really been demonstrated by the overwhelming number of applications that the program has received the last 2 years, with demand really outpacing available funds. I do want to flag one specific concern that we would have with the new language, specifically on 47.3, around the provision that would be specific to lease or renting the equipment. There are farmers who have applied for these grants that do custom work for other farmers in the area. This helps to increase adoption of these practices on more acres through custom applications. And so we'd want to be mindful of not working against the goal of increasing additional adoption of these practices on agricultural land. Another program at MDA where demand really outpaces the available funding is for the Biofuels Infrastructure Grant Program, and we appreciate the additional resources for the program. We would also identify a concern with the indemnity fund, which is less than a year old, and using that accrued interest from the fund for a new or an existing program until the balance has really reached that $15 million maximum that the commissioner has to follow if they were to assess grain indemnity premiums. MCGA is a supporter of the Agriculture Fertilizer Research Education Council, and we would have some concern about ending the council for, especially for the impact on longer-term research with those efforts around soil fertility and nutrient use efficiency that help to benefit a wide variety of crops with that research. But we really do understand that given the budget target and the parameters that the chair and the committee were working with, that some hard choices had to be made. But overall, we think that the bill provides the funding necessary without adding that new fees on fertilizer to implement the work plan in response to the EPA drinking water petition in southeast Minnesota. And we appreciate Chair Vang and the committee's work to put this bill together and the opportunity to provide input on behalf of our members. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Our next testifier is Amanda Kohler from Land Stewardship Project. Thank you for being here. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Amanda Kohler. I'm the policy manager for the Land Stewardship Project. Thank you for having me today. First, I want to thank Chair Vang for her hard work on this bill and for including things like funding to address the Southeast Minnesota water quality crisis, bolstered funding for farm to school and soil health financial assistance, the beginning farmer equipment and infrastructure grants, and more. But I want to focus my testimony today on emerging farmer programs. You know, we've said before, our state should not be forced to choose between the future of these critical programs and prioritizing emerging farmers within them. But because we are in this position, we have been working with our allies to ensure that the legislative changes work for emerging farmers. We largely support the DE amendment's language around these programs, but have two remaining concerns I wanted to flag. First, as courts have repeatedly ruled that technical assistance can be targeted towards historically underserved populations, we believe that the existing statute around technical assistance grants should be able to remain as is. And second, the definition of limited market access is simultaneously narrow and wide. Emerging farmers sell their products in a variety of markets. Many have found that they are most successful when they're able to aggregate and be a part of an aggregated market. At the same time, many farmers who would not necessarily be considered emerging or under-resourced would fall under limited market access, such as well-established farmers who primarily use CSAs or farmers markets to sell their products. So these folks could be unintentionally prioritized in these programs, when our understanding is that the intention is to target folks who have fewer resources or are less established. So largely we support the DE of amendment, and we ask for your support for this bill as amended, and to consider our concerns as you move forward with the bill and into conference committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Our next testifier is Stu Laurie from Minnesota Farmers Union. Welcome, Stu. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Vang and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Laurie. I'm the Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to thank you all and Chair Vang for your work to craft the Supplemental Agricultural Budget Bill. With my 2 minutes, I'll work to quickly highlight two areas of work that we strongly support and that we think make up kind of the bulk of what this supplemental budget is aiming to do, and then highlight a couple areas of concern that we'd appreciate the opportunity to continue to work on. So first and foremost, and our top priority coming in to this session for this committee on the budget, addressing the shortfall in Agri. Chair Vang, you have been unequivocal, not just with our organization and this committee, but also leadership, that's a priority for you as well. And we really appreciate that was addressed in the joint budget targets and that you have this addressed here in this committee. As we've said before, Agri is that umbrella program that funds beginning farmer grants, farm to school, biofuels infrastructure, urban agriculture grants, so many of the programs that make Minnesota a leader. Even more importantly, possibly, but less exciting to legislate, those undesignated funds that are being replenished are what allow MDA to respond quickly to challenges as they did during COVID-19, or more recently in the drought and high-path avian influenza. It's hugely important in a way that MDA is able to show up for our members and others. Second, we support this committee's continued work to address the issue of nitrates in groundwater, funding for MDA's work on nitrates, a boost to soil health equipment grants, and funding to ensure that folks have access to clean water in that 8-county region in the near term are all hugely important, and we're supportive of that work. Two areas of concern. I'll share a concern with rededicating the interest from the Grain Indemnity Fund to another program. As Chair Vang, you've said, and others have shared, that was a key highlight and a generational investment this committee made last session. And an important provision in that was allowing that fund to grow interest, as we do with other funds, ensuring that it grows and protects farmers long term. So eager to work on behalf of farmers market farmers, many of whom we represent going forward, but wanted to share a concern with that. And second, I'll echo other folks' concerns with rededicating funding that would have gone to AFREC. That's research that our members use and MDA uses to inform best management practices. And of course, I'll just say that crafting a budget requires difficult decisions, and we absolutely recognize that. There's lots more I could talk about that we appreciate in this bill: increase for beginning farmer infrastructure, biofuels infrastructure, farm to school increase, grain licensing changes, the funding for AURI, which was heard last session. But I'm sure I'm above my 2 minutes, and I will stop there and be eager to answer any questions. So thank you.
Thank you, Stu. And our final testifier is Dan Sparks from AURI. Welcome, Dan, if you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Dan Sparks, the Director of Government Industry Relations at AURI, Ag Utilization Research Institute. Appreciate the opportunity to make some brief comments today. Basically, just to tell you, thank you very much, Madam Chair and members, for supporting our funding request that will allow us to work with small food and cottage food businesses around the entire state. Our mission at AURI is to accelerate the expansion of agriculture economy by empowering expanded uses and markets of agricultural derived products, and this bill will allow us to continue down that path. At AURI, food is a growing area of work for us. We have over a half a dozen people committed to advancing value-added food opportunities and several other people that support that food work. Last year, we worked on 114 food projects and were interacted with easily a couple hundred more in meetings as potential food clients to provide input to their efforts. The cottage food law that was passed in 2015 has created a large demand for technical assistance in that food area. As many of you know, that industry has really grown from 464 food licenses in its conception year to over 8,900 in the year 2023. Additionally, there are hundreds of more growing small food businesses beyond the cottage food level that we work with to help commercialize opportunities. AURI can no longer provide that one-on-one level of service in the same manner as it used to do, with this growth in the food ecosystem, and would use these funds to advance digital tools for food entrepreneurs to use. It would be a user-friendly interface of AURI and credible curated guidance to help make decisions, create new information content that is in conformity, that is commonly requested in one-on-one discussions, explore translating materials into other languages so that we could expand it into many new markets, and to help fill information gaps to support food businesses such as regional co-manufacturing assets, as well as to help establish a more process authority capacity for acidified foods to service Minnesota food businesses. At AURI, we have a goal of driving $500 million in impact, and these funds will help us deliver more services and positive impact in the local food ecosystem, the agriculture industry, and the state economy. And with that, Madam Chair, again, I just want to thank you. We'll continue to support you and members, also working with our friends at the Minnesota Department of Ag and other stakeholders as this bill continues to make its way through the legislative process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan. Just to double check, is Andre Graham here? All right. Well, I will open up to committee members for questions to the testifiers or to nonpartisan staff. Or any comments? Representative Anderson?
We still have that squeaky microphone here, but anyway, thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions, first of all, for you. I find the bill to be somewhat confusing, and one of the reasons why is we have so many definitions of young farmers. I've seen young farmer, beginning farmer, eligible applicants, emerging farmers, and those experiencing issues with markets and land access. It's confusing, and I'd just like to ask if that could be streamlined somehow, or why we have all these definitions contained in the bill.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. It's you know, I think it's pretty clear in the language what those terms are defined. Of course, maybe perhaps we can organize it a little better, but that's above my pay grade. If there's an opportunity for us to discuss to see how we can better consolidate or better define those terms, I'm open to that discussion. I think we can try to search a little bit, might spend a little more time to search a little bit for the definitions, but I think they are pretty clear from my perspective. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that, and I think part of it may come, too, from a lawsuit filed last year. And so I think that may be part of the definitions being streamlined. Another question I had for you, Madam Chair, we heard back a month ago your House File 4322 that had a department technical change to the definition of sustainable aviation fuel. It passed out of our committee to the Environment Committee and it was going to come back, at least that was the understanding, and it never did. And now changes have been made in the Environment Committee, and we won't have a chance to look at those again. Just wondering why that bill didn't come back to our committee.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Anderson. So, yes, initially that was my understanding that it will come back to the Ag Committee, but after talking with nonpartisan staff and also consulting with Chair Gomez, it will need to be in the Taxes Committee. And so that is a conversation that I'm having with Chair Gomez at the moment. Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. But if you're having that conversation, the bill is not in your jurisdiction anymore, isn't that correct?
Yes, I believe so, simply because it does open up, it does talk about some tax statutes, and so therefore it will need to be in Taxes Committee. Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Just a couple other comments and questions for today. Heard a lot of concerns from a lot of testifiers about provisions in the bill. And the two that rise up, in my estimation, are the one that we are taking the money out of the grain indemnity fund and using it for other purposes. To me, it's kind of a head scratcher. I know we're looking at different areas to come up with funding because this is not a budget year. This committee got a pretty small target of about $4.5 million, but I think, in my opinion, the prevailing attitude of every person I've talked with since that bill was heard was that's not the right thing to do, to take the money out of that account. And I certainly hope that or we will have an amendment that would address that in the committee on Thursday. The other concern I have is the ending of the AFRAC program. There's a one-year extension, but the program is then set to expire. And again, in these times that we're trying to improve the utilization of all fertilizers, it seemed like an inappropriate time to end a program that's been around a while. And the other thing I would point out to committee members is that is not state money. That is money that has been collected from farmers and anybody who buys fertilizer, but mainly farmers. So the taking of that fund that is a fund that is directly paid into by farmers and others that buy fertilizer, to me it's almost ethically wrong that we should be raiding that fund or taking that fund and using it for a state purpose that would usually be funded through state dollars. These are farmer-generated dollars that are being, again, I'm going to use the term raided, to go into another area of use. And I strongly am against the taking of that money for other uses in this committee. And I have other concerns. I'll save those for next week, and I will I'll quit talking. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Further comments? Representative Cha.
The testifiers are open to questions, right? Did you say
yes.
That?
Yes.
Can I get the wild rice testifier down here? I have some questions for you.
Beth Nelson and Tom Godward. Representative Shaw, you can state your question while.
I don't think we heard about wild rice in this committee. It's probably in the Senate, like you mentioned. Can you tell me more about the challenges you're having and the funding that you're needing for what's it for?
Sure.
Beth Nelson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. We have had a line item in the AGREET funding for a number of years. And last year that was being challenged, and Senator Vang and Representative Vang and Senator Putnam challenged the industry and the Department of Agriculture to have a number of meetings to see if we could come up with a compromise. The compromise was not very clear at the end of that process. However, recently we have been able to come up with this compromise that is in the Senate language, where 200,000 of the 450 would go towards natural stands of wild rice, research on natural stands, and 250 would stay in the cultivated industry for the forward selection program that is being currently being done at the NCROC in Grand Rapids.
Representative Cha.
Can you give us an overview of how big or small your industry is and how many farmers this is?
Beth Nelson.
So the industry there are about 32 farms in the state. I should have the number at the top of my head. Do you remember our economic value? I think it's $548 million. I would have to get back to you with that. I did not bring that with me today. But it does bring much-needed income to some of the poorest counties in the state. So wild rice is grown on marginal, often on marginal land that is not suitable for other farming conditions. And so we've created that industry, and like I say, it has brought much-needed income to some of the poorest counties in the state.
Representative Shaw.
Does this program include any of the Native American farmers in wild rice?
So Red Lake Nations is the fifth largest cultivated wild rice producer in the state of Minnesota. They actually provided information last year in a resolution stating that the cultivated wild rice program that they have at Red Lake Farms is actually their most economic enterprise that they have on that reservation, bringing much needed income. They've also just made a huge additional investment in the cultivated wild rice industry by buying a marketing arm that was for sale. So yes, Red Lake Nations is very much involved in this. The other tribal communities will be involved in the compromise that has come up with determining what type of research they would like to see in the 200,000 that's going to go into more the conservation in research of natural stands.
Representative Chow.
Thank you. I have more questions, but I'll take them offline. Thank you, Chair Vang.
Further questions? Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Vang. This is not for the people we currently have up here.
Okay. Who would you like to? Do you have questions for testifiers?
Just general questions on the bill.
Oh, okay. Proceed. Okay. Thank you, Beth. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
So, you know, I'd worked on the ag water quality certification bill, and of course disappointed that we didn't really fund anything for additional farming practices to resolve that issue. But the funding does seem to be directed towards wells in particular, and I'm wondering about the issue of substandard wells. It doesn't appear that we're giving funding just as much to people who may have a substandard well as someone who has a well that's built up to code. So I think the concern or the question is that really a good investment to invest in a well that's not built to code to begin with? And do we have any solutions for that?
Representative Jacob, I think as we heard throughout session that there are communities who have an increased level of nitrate contamination, and there is a need where there are families who don't currently have access to clean drinking water. And I think just to try to address the short-term needs that we've heard in committee, not in just in ag, but in legacy and in the Department of Health, I think this is one proposal that we have looked at so far in this committee. I know you have also contributed other proposals to encourage best practices for farming. And as I've expressed to members, that this is going to take a multifaceted approach, and I think this can be an ongoing conversation, not just for this year, but also for next year too as well. Representative Jacob.
That's all. Thank you.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vang. This question might be for research. So on page 60, where it talks about the waterfall hatching prohibition, so it mentions on that 60.31 class or program, does this mean, or would it apply to, say, a farm would offer this program, that they would not be allowed to offer this program to students?
Mr. Harder, is this for Mr. Sullivan?
I believe.
To clarify?
So, yes.
Mr. Sullivan?
Madam Chair and Representative Harder, you know, I think it's a good question. The way I read the language is it says the school board must prohibit the project as part of a lesson or experimental study in a class or program. So I read that language to mean it's a school-sponsored class or like an after-school program. So as I read the language, if students were to take a field trip to a farm and witness chicks being hatched, to my mind, this language would not prohibit that, but I don't know that it's perfectly clear on that.
Ms. Representative Harder?
I think I need further clarification on that. And the other thing about this particular one is it takes away local control, because now we're saying that the school board must, rather than what we sometimes say a school board may. And so I would request that we look at that change and to allow the school boards to have more flexibility on that particular language on that one. My second question has to do with page 64, and this has to do with this carbon credit report required. So we're going to have this stakeholder working group, but I'm wondering what is the goal, or what recommendations do we have as a committee for this group? Because it says that the commissioner must report recommendations, and I'm just wondering what is our expectation for this working group?
Representative Harder's, I believe this is this is within Representative Vice Chair Purcell's bill, so I'll defer this to Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Harder. I am continuing to work on this and to try and make sure that we are more prescriptive to help the department get off to a running start, and we'll have an amendment to better define that. And so if you want to touch base after this, I'm open to how exactly, if we want to be more prescriptive in defining how that report comes back, or then sort of what next steps come from that, I'm very open to that. And now is a great time for us to collaborate on.
Mm-hmm. Representative Harder?
Thank you for that. I just want to make a comment, I guess. I mean, we have lots of working groups here at the state, working groups on a variety of issues. This one is a little bit concerning because I'm not sure what the direction is, and I just hope that whatever comes out of this working group doesn't lead to a continued government overreach on people in agriculture, because that does have an effect on our bottom line, depending upon what comes out of state. So I just want to make that known, that I'm concerned about the intentions of what would happen with the recommendations from that group. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harder. This is just a report, so there's no overreach. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to compliment you on developing a good compromise. DE, you know, there's things in here that I wish were here, or things that I may not fully support, but that's what compromise is. And each of us around the table here represent over 43,000 people. And so I think there's a little bit of everything from everybody in here, and particularly taking into the context of the discussions and the deliberations that have come. So I think you've done a good job. Maybe just to reiterate the calendar ahead of us for the next couple weeks. We've got Passover break in there, and so what's ahead of us in terms of the timing?
Thank you, Representative Hansen. So amendments will be due at noon tomorrow, and we'll have a regular committee meeting on Thursday to make to adopt amendments or make motions to the bill, and hopefully we will move it out of committee to Ways and Means on Thursday. And after that, I'm a little bit unclear, but we'll keep members posted about when Ways and Means is scheduled to hear the DE1. Further questions? Representative Hansen?
No.
Okay. Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple more questions on the page 52, line 6. We're referring to community health boards. What are they? Can somebody from the department tell us what they are? Are they already established, or is this another layer of local bureaucracy?
Do we have someone from the Representative Hansen?
Madam Chair, and they already exist in your counties. They may be called specifically different names, but there are community health boards that work with public health. Okay.
Representative Anderson?
Thanks, Madam Chair. In your appropriations, there's $100,000 to the pollinator account. I don't recall that being a discussion item this year in the committee. Where did that funding request come from?
Representative Anderson, so this was a bill we heard last year. And we did appropriate some funding to the pollinator research account last year in its passage. And so I do see that the pollinator research account is a valuable item before the committee. And so I've just added a little amount there to replenish the funds. Representative Anderson.
Did they request that additional funding?
Representative Anderson, so this year I've been, I've been managing expectation, letting stakeholders know that I won't be hearing any finance bills. And so we have heard limited finance bills this year. And so this is additional funds that we weren't able to fund everything last year. And so this is just in continuation of the items, the committee's priority that were passed last year. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Could somebody from the department come up and answer a question on an Article 2 pesticide control, please?
If you can identify yourself for the record.
Chair Vang, Representative Anderson. I'm Joshua Stamper. I'm the Division Director of the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division in the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Mr. Stamper, I raised this question earlier, didn't really get an answer earlier during the year. I assume this article has to do with being licensed in handling restricted use pesticides. And I raised the point of maybe somebody who's driving a water truck out to service a sprayer, if they would have to be licensed. And here now I see on in the article also it talks about somebody who's handling I assume empty pesticide containers. So if somebody's back at the co-op going to dispose of some of these containers and plastic jugs or whatever, would they have to be licensed to handle those things?
Representative Anderson, can you identify the line so that?
Okay, it's page 30, line 27. Sorry about that.
My apologies. What's your name again?
Madam Chair, my name is Joshua Stamper.
Josh, if you can proceed to answer the question.
Yes. Representative Anderson, handlers are also, if they are using restricted use pesticides, they would be required to also have, like, licensing. Everyone who is physically using restricted use products needs to understand what the general expectations are about safety and universal precautions, which is an integral part of what we train on that.
Representative Anderson.
So just to clarify, so somebody picking up a box from the back of a pickup and putting it up on the back of a trailer, that would be termed handling pesticides.
Josh?
Chair Vang, Representative Anderson, if the container's open, that's when they're a handler.
Okay.
Representative Anderson.
Okay. Thank you for that answer. That clarifies it. And just one final comment, Madam Chair. You mentioned that you were in discussions with the tax chair on that sustainable aviation bill. Right now, that is in the Environment Committee's omnibus bill, which is due to be heard on the floor, I assume, one of these next few days. It has those changes in it to how the tax credits are administered. So that seems to be the barn doors open, and it's going to be heard in the environment bill because it's there, it's in their bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Yes, I am aware, and I believe Chair Hansen will be going through his DE today. And I think he and I can have a more detailed conversation. Representative Hansen, do you want to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Anderson. So there's the provision that was the department's initiative for the correction or addition to the language. What we have in the environment bill is we had testimony in the environment of how do we validate that sustainable aviation fuel is sustainable, and who is the third-party validator that the work is actual sustainable aviation fuel. So the provisions that are added in the environment are based on the testimony in the environment committee. As Chair Vang mentioned, the question about who gets tax credits is a different question, and as you know, the tax committee has kind of a different timeline. I've never quite understood what that timeline is, but it's a different timeline than the rest of us. So they have a little bit more flexibility. So the provisions that are in the environment bill are the parts that relate to the testimony that we heard on the environmental side relating to how do you make sure it's sustainable, do we try, how do we prevent conversion of non-cropland into cropland that would be used for sustainable aviation fuel.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Thanks, Representative Hansen, for the explanation. I looked at the language in your bill, and it talked about having to be cropped 5 out of the last 10 years, those types of things, and a form being approved by Bowser to certify that those things are being done. And, you know, you mentioned maybe being grown on land that's not currently in production. It's going to be a real challenge to produce corn that meets these carbon reduction score goals that are being instituted by the federal government. So I think the last thing that any farmer would think of would be plowing up a wetland or whatever, a pasture to grow corn on to qualify as sustainable aviation fuel. It's going to be a big enough challenge trying to use cover crops and precision fertilizer applications to get that carbon score down low enough to qualify for the credits. But there was concern mentioned about how that tax credit would be administered, and I understand that will be done in the tax committee, but there was some concern about that not coming back to the Ag Committee, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Further questions or comments? Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair Vang, for putting together this extensive, DE. There are some good things and some bad things in here, but you know what I'm most excited about? It's Purcell's bill about protecting our honey, you know. And so, you know, it's kind of humorous, but, I've had, you know, sugar honey before, and it's not that pleasant. So this is a great pathway to protect our bees and our pollinators. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Shaw. Any further questions, complaints, or compliments? Representative Anderson.
I just want to say thank you, Madam Chair, for pushing back your amendment deadline a few hours. That'll help us, so thank you for that.
Thank you. I've heard extensively from members, so my apologies, but thank you for your patience. And with that, members, we are done with our testimonies for today and questions. Members, there is a save folder, so please put these documents in the save folder because it will be the same documents we'll be using for Thursday's committee. And with that, our next meeting is Thursday, April 18th. Thank you, everyone. This meeting is adjourned.